very nearly noon, and it's time for KMXT Midday Report. You're listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station. Pleasant conditions right now in Kodiak City, 58 degrees. We're looking for isolated showers after 1 p.m. today. Partly sunny skies, though, otherwise, with a high near 62 today. Partly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 54. And scattered showers tomorrow. Coming up on the Midday Report, it seems like something new about the Pebble Mine every day, and something is new today. Also, we'll be remembering Natalia again. News about a Kodiak fisherman who has agreed to jail time and a substantial fine. And Alaska's ballot measure number one is in the news. Very nice conditions all around the island for mariners.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. President Trump and Vice President Mike Pence have officially nominated to represent the Republican Party's ticket in the upcoming election. NPR's Sarah McCammon reports the two candidates made a surprise visit to the Republican National Convention, which kicked off in Charlotte, North Carolina today.
Both President Trump and Vice President Mike Pence dropped in unannounced, where they were greeted enthusiastically by Republican delegates. In a nearly hour-long speech, Trump tried to remind voters of life before the pandemic and, once again, to plant seeds of doubt about the validity of the upcoming election.
Be very careful and watch it very carefully, because we have to win. This is the most important election in the history of our country. This is the most, you know, for...
The convention is mostly taking place virtually, but hundreds of delegates gathered here for the president's formal renomination. President Trump is expected to appear every night, including a speech from the White House, capping off the convention on Thursday. Sarah McCammon, NPR News, Charlotte.
The head of the U.S. Postal Service testified before a House committee today. Postmaster General Louis DeJoy denied that a series of operational changes at the agency are linked to the November election. DeJoy, a major Trump donor, is accused of working with the White House to undermine the Postal Service as it prepares to handle an expected influx of mail-in ballots. Officials in Kenosha, Wisconsin, are surveying the damage after a night of violent demonstrations over the police shooting of a black man. As Chuck Quernbach from member station WUWN reports, an investigation is underway.
Windows are broken at the downtown post office and several businesses. Many vehicles at a used car lot are charred after being set on fire. The destruction followed a video that appeared to show police seriously wounding Jacob Blake after responding Sunday afternoon to what officers say was a domestic incident. Outside the county courthouse, another black man, Xavier Wallace, tried to explain the anger.
When enough is enough, what would you expect? What did you expect one to do?
The Wisconsin Department of Justice is reviewing the police shooting. Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden is calling for a full and transparent investigation. For NPR News, I'm Chuck Quernbach in Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Doctors in Germany have confirmed that Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny has been poisoned. NPR's Rob Schmitz reports Navalny exposed corruption within the Kremlin and is one of President Vladimir Putin's fiercest critics and political opponents.
Doctors at Berlin's Charité Hospital say that Navalny was poisoned by a cholinesterase inhibitor, which damages the nervous system. Doctors say Navalny is being treated with the antidote atropine and that long-term damage to his nervous system cannot be ruled out. Navalny remains in a medically induced coma.
NPR's Rob Schmitz reporting from Berlin. At last check on Wall Street, the Dow was up 378 points, the Nasdaq up 67. This is NPR News in Washington. Forecasters are tracking two storm systems that are making their way toward the U.S. Gulf Coast. Tropical Storm Marco continues to lose strength, but is expected to bring heavy rain and high winds to parts of Louisiana later today. Tropical Storm Laura is picking up speed and is on track to come ashore as a hurricane in the next couple of days. Nearly 250,000 people in California remain under evacuation orders and warnings as wildfires continue to burn. Firefighters are working to contain hundreds of blazes, including a massive wildfire in Monterey County, just south of Big Sur. For the first time in more than a century, Ohio lawmakers have launched an attempt to impeach a sitting governor. Karen Kessler from Ohio Public Radio reports the articles of impeachment have been drafted by three members of Governor Mike DeWine's own party.
The articles of impeachment assert DeWine overstepped his authority in his coronavirus orders. For instance, delaying the March 17th primary and shutting down businesses. Conservative Representative John Becker is among a small but vocal group of Republicans who've attempted to push back on DeWine's public health orders.
The governor is not working with the General Assembly. He is, you know, as some would say, governor gone wild. And he needs to be stopped.
A June Quinnipiac poll showed DeWine's approval rating at an all-time high, and few expect the impeachment effort to gain traction. DeWine's spokesman said in a statement that the governor is focused on saving lives and helping the economy. For NPR News, I'm Karen Kessler in Columbus.
I'm Windsor Johnston, and you're listening to NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Arcus Foundation, dedicated to the idea that people can live in harmony with one another and the natural world. Learn more about Arcus and its partners at arcusfoundation.org. And the listeners who support this NPR station.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
The United States Army Corps of Engineers has issued a letter outlining what the developers of the proposed Pebble Mine have to do to mitigate damage to wetlands and streams. The conditions may be hard to meet, but the letter does not prohibit the mine outright. Politico reported this week that the Trump administration would block the project in southwest Alaska at the headwaters of Bristol Bay. Pebble Limited Partnership CEO Tom Collier said in a written statement this morning that conditions don't delay or pause the project. He said he expects Pebble will submit a mitigation plan in a matter of weeks. Tim Bristol of Salmon State says the EPA should exercise its veto power over the mine and that anything else is inadequate to protect Bristol Bay. During its Sunday morning service, the Holy Resurrection Cathedral remembered a Kodiak woman who was killed in a hit-and-run last week. The congregation sang an ancient hymn for Natalia Izachenko, Memories Eternal, as the church bells rang. Father Innocent Dresden told the gathering he had been in touch with Izachenko's ex-husband, an American who is a retired professor living in Florida. He said he met and married Izachenko in St. Petersburg, Russia. Later, the two moved to the United States, where his wife worked in a pharmacy, and they raised a son. They visited Alaska in 2004, and it was about that time that their marriage unraveled, that despite many efforts to treat his wife, she was tortured by voices in her head and believed he was one of the devils. Father Innocent Dresden talked about Izachenko's struggles with mental illness and homelessness, and how her life and death is a reminder of the importance of being a good neighbor, even if that person lives in an orbit outside the mainstream. Over the years, Kodiak learned to live with the mystery of Izachenko, who was known to carry on conversations with stuffed bears, bushes, and trees, as well as a painting of a fisherman at the library. People often tried to help, but the more they offered, the more she ran away. Izachenko died 2 days after her 62nd birthday. A Kodiak fisherman has agreed to jail time and a substantial fine over charges he falsified fishing records. James Aaron Stevens will plead guilty to one count of false labeling, a violation of the Lacey Act, a federal law that protects against trafficking illegally taken wildlife. Stevens is the owner and operator of two fishing vessels out of Kodiak, the Alaskan Star and the Southern Seas. He has admitted to knowingly submitting false records. U.S. Attorney Brian Schroeder made the announcement about the plea deal on Friday. In the agreement, Stevens admits to falsifying daily fish logbooks for halibut and sablefish individual fishing quotas, as well as the Alaska Department of Fish and Game tickets and reports about the locations where the fishing gear was deployed. The investigation also revealed that Stevens maintained accurate fishing information in a separate personal log. The Alaska U.S. District Attorney's Office investigated 26 fishing trips in which it says Stevens falsified records involving more than 900,000 pounds of halibut and sablefish that were falsely reported. The violations occurred between 2014 and 2017. The fish had a dock value of more than $4.5 million and a market value of more than $13 million. Federal attorneys did not specify the amount of prison time Stevens faces, but said he also agreed to pay a substantial fine before sentencing. He will also have to comply with vessel monitoring as part of his conditions of supervised release. Also part of the deal, Stevens will have to make a public service announcement in which he acknowledges his wrongdoing to be submitted to the National Fisherman Magazine. Alaska's ballot measure 1 is shaping up into a big fight. The Citizens Initiative seeks to increase the production tax on Alaska's three biggest oil fields, all in the North Slope. Proponents say it will help address the looming budget deficit and give Alaskans what they call a fair share in oil profits. But opponents, backed by oil companies, say the plan will drive investment away and that higher taxes are bad for business. Corinne Smith and KFSK in Petersburg talked with both campaigns and has this.
Ballot Measure 1 are calling it the Fair Share Act and see it as Alaskans getting a fair deal in profits from the oil industry. Robin Brenna is an Anchorage attorney and chairs the Fair Share campaign.
We need more of our oil wealth to stay in Alaska. We need our fair share of oil to stay in Alaska. And if it does, it'll make a huge difference.
Opponents say raising taxes will dissuade oil companies from investing in Alaska and cause oil jobs to be lost. Bill Corbis is a former Alaska Revenue Commissioner and a member of an opposition group called Keep Alaska Competitive.
We see this as discouraging investment, therefore revenues to the state of Alaska falling off.
As written, Ballot Measure 1 seeks to bolster oil tax revenues for the state by taxing its three biggest, highly profitable oil fields on the North Slope, Alpine, Kuparuk, and Prudhoe Bay. If passed, it would raise the tax from 4% to 10% on the gross value of Alaska's crude oil up to $50 per barrel, with a slight increase as prices rise beyond that. The initiative would also eliminate tax credits to those big three fields and require companies' tax filings to the Alaska Department of Revenue be made public so that people can see how those fields are performing. Brenna himself is one of the architects of the ballot measure and sees the transparency piece as crucial.
I don't know about you, but if I'm in business with somebody like we are in business with these producers and they're producing our oil from our land, we should have the right to know what the revenues, costs, and profits are associated with each field.
The Yes on One campaign estimates new revenues could be over $1 billion a year, even with oil prices fluctuating. Though the tax revenues could not be directed into any specific fund, like the Alaska Permanent Dividend Fund, for example, they say it would help the mounting budget deficit and help pay some of Alaska's bills.
PFDs are a third of what they should be. We've had massive cuts to essential services. The ferry system in Southeast Alaska doesn't even reliably provide service anymore.
Opponents of Measure 1 agree the budget deficit is a problem, but they say current oil revenues are enough, like royalties and other taxes, which added up to roughly $2.6 billion last year, according to the Department of Revenue. Alaskans shouldn't risk oil investors fleeing, and without that investment, long-term oil production falling, says Corbis, the former revenue commissioner.
If this initiative passes, our total government take will be much higher than our competitors. So why would the oil companies not invest where the tax regime is much less than in Alaska? And that's what our real concern is.
But the Fair Share campaign says there's no guarantee that companies like ConocoPhillips will make those investments in the North Slope rather than collect oil revenues and pay them out to executives and shareholders. ConocoPhillips is also a major donor to the largest opposition campaign, One Alaska, which has raised nearly $10 million to defeat the tax initiative. It's one of the most expensive ballot campaigns in Alaska state history. KFSK inquired with One Alaska numerous times by email and phone to discuss campaign finance, but they did not return requests for comment. Keep Alaska Competitive has not filed any campaign finance disclosures this year and would not answer questions about One Alaska's funding. The Fair Share campaign has raised more than $650,000, according to state filings, with about half coming from Brenna himself. Alaskans will vote on ballot measure 1, the North Slope Oil Tax Initiative, on November 3rd. In Petersburg, I'm Corinne Smith.
Alaska's highest court has sided with environmentalists. The state shouldn't have turned over a swath of southeast forest land to the Mental Health Trust for potential logging. The case goes back to the 1990s, when a settlement was reached that a 3,400-acre tract on Kwiyu Island would be managed by the state as wilderness. But in 2009, the State Department of Natural Resources began to quietly engineer a way to turn over No Name Bay to the Alaska Mental Health Trust, which commercially logs in the region.
And that's when SEAC is like, whoa, 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 that's against the agreement that we have.
Meredith Traynor is an executive director of the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, which filed a lawsuit in 2013 after it learned of the state's intentions. On Friday, the Alaska Supreme Court released a 51-page decision. A majority of the justices rejected a number of arguments by SEAC, but all agreed with a central charge that the state violated public notice requirements when it tried to transfer the land without telling anybody. It's kicked the case back to the lower court to work out the details of exactly what happens next with the land. But the bottom line, Traynor says, is that the forest land around No Name Bay won't be ceded to the Mental Health Trust for potential clear-cutting.
And those lands provide important access to Kwiyu Island for Southeast Alaskans who hunt, fish, and recreate there. It also includes key habitat for wildlife from deer to marten, otter, wolf, black bear, migratory waterfowl, and of course salmon.
A spokesman for the State Department of Natural Resources says the agency is still considering the decision and declined to comment until it had analyzed the court's opinion. Postmaster Louis DeJoy says he's considering cutting the Alaska's bypass mail program to save money.
Take the Alaska bypass plan discussion. That's an item on the table. That's an unfunded mandate. It costs us like $500 million a year. And if I'm not saying what I asked for is all the unfunded mandates. Right? That's a way for us to get healthy. Pay something for the unfunded mandates.
DeJoy spoke Friday morning to the Senate Homeland Security Committee. Bypass mail is a program that has subsidized cargo shipments to rural Alaska since 1972. It allows delivery of consumer goods and groceries to small communities at low parcel post rates. The palletized shipments bypass all postal facilities and go directly to the air carriers. It's not clear why DeJoy said the program costs $500 million annually. In recent years, the bypass mail has been a $100 million program. The rural customer, typically a store or school, pays about one-third of that, and the Postal Service makes up the difference. Alaska's congressional delegation says the program is a lifeline for rural Alaska. They say it actually saves the Postal Service money because the goods don't have to go through post offices. U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan says he's met with postal officials to make the case, and he will do it again.
A lot of these guys don't understand it. And, you know, the geographic reality of Alaska requires the Postal Service to deliver mail by air in order to meet its universal service obligation, period.
DeJoy says he's looking at hundreds of items to cut costs A 2013 study of bypass mail commissioned by the State Department of Transportation found that potable liquids like milk, soft drinks, and water account for about 40% of the volume of bypass mail. Building materials and heavy items such as boat motors aren't allowed.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
And by Ardinger's Fine Furnishings, proud to offer a variety of sofas and love seats made in Oregon by Stanton, as well as massage and zero-gravity chairs by Human Touch. Find the fabric and style that fits your lifestyle in the store or by special order. Also featuring inviting rugs, lamps, and accessories for your home at Ardinger's, 486-5554.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. The marine economy outpaces the national GDP. More after this.
Fish Radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, online at alaskaboat.com.
A first-ever analysis has measured the economic force of our nation's marine economy, including contributions from commercial fishing, shipbuilding, seaports, beachfront hotels, and other activities dependent on the oceans. A team from NOAA, the Department of Commerce, and the Bureau of Economic Analysis looked at 10 business sectors that work on the nation's oceans, coasts, and Great Lakes between the years 2014 and 2018. Their report shows that the marine-related gross domestic product grew 5.8% from 2017 to 2018 and outpaced growth of the overall national economy over the 5 years of the study. The ocean economy contributed nearly $373 billion to the nation's GDP in 2018, and blue businesses supported 2.3 million jobs. In announcing the news, NOAA said the statistics clarify just how dependent America is on our waters, adding it's nearly impossible for most Americans to go a single day without eating, wearing, or using products that come from or through our coastal communities. Tourism and recreation, including sport fishing, topped the list of GDP contributors at $143 billion, followed distantly by national defense and offshore minerals. Commercial fishing and aquaculture ranked fifth at $13 billion to the GDP. Marine industries poised for growth include offshore wind energy, marine robotics, aquaculture, and ocean pharmaceuticals, NOAA said. Now, for the first time, the U.S. has ocean data that can be compared with statistics on other U.S. industries and with the ocean economies of other nations. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 32. This announcement was issued 10:15 a.m. August 24th. The Duck Bay section and Iziwit Bay section of the Afognak District, south of a line from Haystack Rock to Pillar Cape, will close to commercial salmon fishing at 6 p.m. Monday, August 24th. There will be a 48-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 6 p.m. Monday, August 24th to 6 p.m. Wednesday, August 26th in the following areas: the Humpy Deadman, Cape Alitak, Alitak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alitak District, the Outer Karlik section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Central section of the Northwest Kodiak District, and the Southwest Afognak section of the Afognak District. As previously announced, the following areas will close to commercial salmon fishing at 6 p.m. Monday, August 24th. The Inner Iakulik and Outer Iakulik sections of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Sheraton Bay, Kajuyak Bay, Terror Bay, and Inner Uganic Bay sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, the Dog Salmon Flat section of the Alitak District, the Afognak District, except the Southwest Afognak section and Iziwit Bay section north of a line from Haystack Rock remain open, the Big River, Hallow Bay, Outer Kukak Bay, Dakovac Bay, Katmai, and Alinchak sections of the mainland district north of the latitude of Cape Kekernoi, the east side Kodiak district, and the northeast Kodiak district. Close water adjustments. Close waters are reduced in the Dog Salmon Flats section of the Alitak district until 6 p.m. Monday, August 24th, to the ADF&G markers located at the stream terminus of Dog Salmon Creek. Closed waters are reduced in the Dog Salmon Flat section of the Alitak District until 6 p.m. Monday, August 24th, to Horse Marine's exit channel terminus at the ocean shoreline. Within the Alinchak Bay section of the mainland district, closed waters are reduced to the stream terminus at the ocean shoreline until 6 p.m. Monday, August 24th, in the following locations: Bear Bay Creek, West Bear Creek, Big Alinchak River, and Little Alinchak River. The following areas remain open until further notice: the Iseuit Bay section of the Afognak District, north of a line from Haystack Rock to Pillar Cape. Until further notice, in that portion of the northwest Kodiak and southwest Kodiak districts south of the latitude of Cape Kuliak, Chinook salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Closed waters are shown on the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in the Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations. Statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. Recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record-a-phone at 486-4559.
Well, welcome to Monday. It's the 24th of August, the year 2020. Sun rose today at 6:55 a.m., won't set again until 9:28 this evening, giving us 14 hours and 33 minutes of daylight. That's a loss of 4 minutes and 49 seconds compared to yesterday. Over here on the east side, we just had a low tide at 12:18 p.m. That was a 1-foot tide. Your next high tide will be at 6:46 this evening, a 9-foot tide. Over on the west side, your low tide coming up will happen at 1 p.m. exactly, a 1.11-foot tide. Okay, that's like happening at 1 p.m., a 1.11-foot tide. High tide this evening will be at 7:08 p.m., 15.2 feet. 61 degrees here in Kodiak, pleasant conditions. Looking for some isolated showers after 2 p.m. today and some scattered showers tomorrow and Wednesday. Similarly warm weather, though. Here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A 1,011 millibar low, 100 nautical miles southwest of Middleton Island, will move to 30 nautical miles south of Cordova and go to 1,006 millibars by Tuesday morning. Its front will extend across the northern Gulf through Tuesday afternoon. Resulting weather, pretty darn good. West winds to 20 knots here on the east side, seas to 4 feet right now. Tonight through Tuesday night, we're looking at west winds to 20 knots and seas to 5 feet. Thursday, northwest 20, seas to 5 feet. And Friday, south 25, seas to 7 feet. Inside waters, Chiniac and Marmot Bays, we're looking at northwest to westerly winds, 10 knots, seas 2 to 3 feet. And those conditions going on until Friday. Over in the Shelikof, southwest winds to 20 knots, seas to 5 feet right now. Look for southwest 20 knots, seas to 5 feet tomorrow as well. For Wednesday, variable 10, seas to 3 feet in the Shelikof. The Kodiak City Council will hold a work session tomorrow. The meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. at the Kodiak Public Library Multipurpose Room. The meeting is open to the public, but for COVID-19 protective measures, please wear a mask and be prepared to socially distance. For more information, call the city clerk at 486-8636. Kodiak City Council will hold a regular meeting on Thursday. That meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. as well, but be held in the Borough Assembly Chambers. This meeting is also open to the public. You're also asked to wear a mask and be prepared to socially distance. For more information, call the clerk, 486-8636. Well, it's time for the August Bear Town in a Box. Kodiak Arts Council and Bear Town Market have an epic assortment of Kodiak-made items in this month's box. Lots of Kodiak love with tie-dye, glassware, botanicals, and lip balm, coasters, illustrated recipes, note cards, everything you need. Look for the Bear Town Market in a Box for sale at the Kodiak Arts Council website. That's at kodiakarts.org. And remember, pickup is Saturday, August 29th from 12 to 2 p.m. at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. One more week left in the Kodiak Public Library Summer Reading Program. The Bees and Story Walk are still available to see. Be sure to log your reading in on Beanstack or turn your written log in to enter a drawing for the grand surprise. The last day is Monday, August 31st, next Monday. Also, on the 26th at 12 p.m., Kodiak Public Library will be hosting a garden party. Come help dig, weed, and prepare the library garden for winter. Staggered arrivals are appreciated to maintain a six-foot distance from other gardeners. For more information about these things, call 486-8636.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT two times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.